As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
New York may be the most important city in all of human history. Now, that is a big claim because it is up against some seriously stiff competition, and even today it's not the largest, wealthiest, most productive, or even most populous city in the world. But as it was becoming the metropolis it is today, it was also, in turn, the early foundation of what would go on to be the largest and most dominant economy of all time. Today, in its ever-expanding borders, the city has a GMP, or gross metropolitan product, of $1.9 trillion, which represents an economy that is not only larger than all but nine of the most productive countries in the world, being around the same size as Canada, but it's also somehow larger than the collective economy of New York State itself, which is worth exploring to see how that's even possible. The sheer scale of this metropolis does start to make a little bit more sense, though, when it's considered what it made possible. New York is the financial capital of the world in a country that is the de facto global centre of trade, geopolitics, and, it must be recognised, military power. Just a few small buildings in this city bring in trillions of dollars from all around the world and put it to work in some of the most valuable and productive companies ever created. Some of these companies, like Apple and Microsoft, are now individually worth more than every single public company listed in countries like Australia, which is itself a major global economy. Unsatisfied with just being the centre of the world's largest financial markets, New York City is also developing a technology centre that is rivaling other US cities like Seattle and San Francisco, on top of other substantial industries that don't get as much attention, like film, media, tourism, and perhaps surprisingly, even manufacturing. New York is also a city that's more than the sum of its parts, and its growth from a Dutch trade port to the centre of global finance can also teach us a lot about the economic development of the United States as a whole. Simultaneously, it can also give us some insights into its future. Megacities have been powerful drivers of global economic growth for the past century, but they have their problems, and a lot of those problems are becoming increasingly apparent in the megacity that arguably started it all. So, what is it that made New York City in particular so economically dominant? What can the city reveal about the economic success of the rest of the USA? And finally, what are the economic challenges that this city is going to need to seriously address in the coming years? After we've done all of that, and just for a bit of fun, we can put New York City on the Economics Explained, anything we can put on a map leaderboard.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas. Plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
The city of New York, as it exists today, really got started when the new United States of America pushed out British forces at the end of the American Revolutionary War in 1783. The city was already well established at the time and served as something of a central base of British forces, and it was the last place they held before withdrawing from the war entirely. Before that even, the region went back and forth between the British and the Dutch, and there was a good reason why all of these powerful empires fought so hard over this area. New York's geography is absolutely amazing for trade. The area creates a natural safe harbour protected from the ocean, but it's still deep enough to accommodate ships that can make it across the Atlantic between Europe. The entire east coast of the USA has a fair few of these natural port formations, which is a massive advantage over countries that have to create their own deep water ports from scratch, or just don't have them at all. Even today, despite the fact that other industries have grown to dominate the city, New York is still home to the fourth largest shipping port in the USA, one that is almost twice as large as any of the ports on the West Coast, which are primarily responsible for trade with China. A quick but really interesting side note is that the only ports in the USA that are larger than the complex in New York are the ones based around the connection between the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico. An immense amount of production gets done around the river, and goods can be very cheaply transported up and down the river, connecting at either end to ports that provide these industries with their supplies and export their finished products around the world. New York also benefits from this kind of trade to a slightly smaller degree, because the Hudson connects through a series of canals to the Great Lakes, another region that is home to huge industrial centres. Beyond just New York itself, these lakes and networks of navigable rivers are one of the foundational reasons that the USA is an economic superpower today. The cost to transport things via these riverways is very low because riverboats don't need to be seaworthy or particularly powerful. Moving stuff on these barges is cheaper than trucks, trains, or even competitive with container ships over the ocean. Oh, and it has the small advantage of already being built, unlike other transport infrastructure that can cost billions of dollars to construct. Beyond just transportation, rivers provide sanitation, irrigation, and even food. Large river networks are common characteristics amongst other economic superpowers like China, where 40% of their economy is based along just one river, the Yangtze. Today, New York's port is not a typical trading port like it was throughout its history. It brings in far more goods than it exports, and most of those imports are just to fuel the massive demand of millions of extremely wealthy people that call the metropolitan area their home, which is particularly impressive to think about when it's remembered that this is still one of the largest trading ports in the world. So what is it then that's driving that wealth today? Well, of course, it's impossible to talk about the economy of New York and not talk about finance. The city is home to thousands of financial institutions and intermediaries, but the reason that they choose to establish themselves here, at its core, is because of the two stock exchanges in the city. The NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange today mostly conduct their business electronically. But it's that business that arguably pushed New York from a convenient trade port into what it is today, while also turning the USA from a country with a lot of potential into what is the undisputed economic superpower in the world for almost a century. On the surface, it looks like all that these places do is shift around paper ownership of companies, and day to day there is a lot of that. But this all works to serve a very important purpose. The stock market is a market like any other. It links buyers and sellers in a manner that's relatively efficient. Certainly not perfectly efficient, like some economists would have people believe, but it's still the best system we have to link producers or asset holders who are willing and able to sell stuff with people who are willing and able to buy it. A market of any form is effectively a way for people to use a currency to vote on what it is that they want produced. In a fruit market, if everybody buys apples and nobody buys pears, then farmers will notice this trend and stop wasting resources on growing pears and instead dedicate their resources to growing the apples that everybody actually wants. Now, this is of course a very simple example, but the feedback mechanism of a free market is how an economy can produce millions of goods and services with a good amount of certainty that those goods and services will be valued. Perhaps nowhere is this more important than in the market for capital. What the stock markets really are is a way for companies to sell small fractions of their ownership in return for money that they can then use to buy more of the factors of production, land, labour, and capital, to produce more of whatever it is that they produce. Just like the hungry market customers picking between pears and apples to choose the fruit that will make the best snack, investors will put their money into these markets to pick the companies that they think will make the best return. Now, stock markets are not unique to New York or the USA. There are hundreds of markets all over the world where investors can buy shares in companies either from the company themselves or a secondary seller. New York wasn't even the first place to do this. That was the Netherlands, where shares in the Dutch East India Company were sold to members of the public from the Amsterdam Stock Exchange to fund their colonial efforts around the world before the first permanent European settlements in North America even existed. It would be another 170 years before the New York Stock Exchange formally opened, but in that time, it became the chicken and egg of the USA's economic success. The reason that the New York Stock Exchange and later the NASDAQ became the largest stock exchanges in the world is because they list the world's biggest publicly traded companies. The reason they can do that is because they serve the world's biggest economy, and the reason the economy got so big to begin with was because, amongst other things, companies could get the investment they needed to grow to scales that made them globally dominant. Obviously, these exchanges and New York City itself is just a small part of this productivity feedback loop, but it is an incredibly important part. Even today, when other advanced economies around the world are struggling with innovation and an over-reliance on basic industries, the USA is funding and building a range of businesses that will shape the world into the future in ways that we don't even know yet. What's more is that people want in on this from all around the world. Given its size and global dominance, the USA controls the world's unofficial reserve currency. It also has demonstrated that it's a safe place to invest, where things like property rights are taken very seriously. And of course, despite the headlines, it is an incredibly politically stable country. What this all means is that if investors are looking to invest their money outside of their home country, the USA is the logical place to do it, and the easiest way to make those investments is through these exchanges that conveniently sell prepackaged portions of some of the world's most successful companies. Now, just as much good as New York has done for industrialization all over the US, trading those shares has become an industry that has done a lot of good for New York. The number of people directly employed in the stock exchanges is very low, but indirectly, thousands of financial institutions operate in this region to play their part in allocating capital as efficiently as possible, and millions of people work indirectly to support those industries. Everybody from the workers building skyscrapers, lawyers hammering out billion-dollar contracts, to people cooking dinners at world-class restaurants are doing it in the city in no small part because of the industry that's been built up around building other industries. All of these millions of people also demand goods and services of their own, and quickly it's easy to see how one of the world's wealthiest cities has been built. Now, if being the middleman between investors from all around the world and companies seeking that investment wasn't enough, the city has also developed some other world-leading industries right alongside it. The city's reputation for being the centre of everything has made it the global hub of media and journalism, and a strong entertainment competitor to cities like Los Angeles. The city also has a growing technology sector, which, while not as developed as Silicon Valley just yet, is still becoming home to a range of the same companies that built the feedback loop of industrial innovation that we explored earlier. Now, all of these independent industries want to have operations in the city because there are real economic benefits to being close to suppliers, customers, and even competition, thanks to something called agglomeration. It's a terrible word, but what it means is that a company trying to make a new technology that can talk to investors, get parts, sign legal documents, hire workers, talk to the press about what it is that they're doing, and even see what their competitors are up to, all within the same city block, are going to, all other things being equal, provide better goods and services than a company that needs to split these functions up over lots of different locations. The benefits of agglomeration have also maintained an industry in the city that is rather unexpected by almost any economic theory, and that's manufacturing. Manufacturing normally thrives where land and labour are as cheap as possible. Cheaper factories and cheaper factory workers can make cheaper and therefore more competitive goods. This is the reason why a lot of manufacturing is outsourced to places like Asia. But New York has very expensive land and some of the highest paid residents in the world because, well, nobody can afford to live there if they aren't well paid. Despite all of this though, New York has a very large manufacturing centre and it's one of the city's biggest employers. Now, overall, these jobs do pay less than the city's average, and that is causing some very real social issues as the city continues to get more and more expensive to live in. But they still pay much more than they would in other areas that are more typically associated with manufacturing. The reason that this sector hasn't been the victim of the same kind of industrial slowdowns that have hurt places like Detroit is because New York's factories don't really produce things to compete in global markets like cars. They produce things to compete in New York. This is a great demonstration of the intricacies of economies of scale. Typically, producing more of a given good or service lets manufacturers specialise more in producing those goods, and also make larger investments into production that can be divided up across more end goods, so in the long run, producing more of something will make the unit cost of that good cheaper up to a point. If a company wanted to produce 1,000 plastic cups, it might not be worth it to pay for specialised moulds to mass produce those goods because plastic injection moulds can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars each, and divided across just 1,000 plastic cups, they'll be left with a disposable item that costs at least $100, which obviously no consumer is going to buy. It might work out to be cheapest in this case to do something like just hand make the cups, costing $5 each. Still an expensive plastic cup, but better than $100. If a company wanted to make a billion plastic cups, then the price of the $100,000 mold becomes insignificant when spread out over all the cups, and the company could also make them where salaries and factories are cheaper, because again, the price of shipping items in bulk is worth it because it has such low individual cost. Economies of scale is great, but there are plenty of times when consumers don't want a billion of something, and that's where small local producers can quickly make low production or one-off items and remain competitive. Most of what is produced in New York is consumed in New York, but because of the scale of the center's economy, even this local industry employs hundreds of thousands of people. Unfortunately, this manufacturing center has not been immune from the effects of globalization, and as more global industries that make billions of dollars from around the world move into the city, there's less space for these industries to survive. Okay, now just like Tokyo, we're going to put New York, one of the world's most globally influential cities, on the Economics Explained national leaderboard. Starting as always with size. It's difficult to get an accurate estimate of the economic output of a city because there are no hard borders that define where it starts and stops. There are few records of what's traded in and out of those ill-defined borders, and organisations like the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank don't make GDP figures for cities. To make matters worse, the New York metropolitan area is spread out over three individual states that all manage their economies in slightly different ways. The best estimates that the team could find gives the broadest definition of New York City, including all of its boroughs and extended industrial areas, a total economic output of $1.9 trillion, making it the second largest city in the world by output, behind only Tokyo. Compared to national economies, this would still give the city an 8 out of 10. That output is spread out over a collective population of 23.5 million people, which means the city has a GDP per capita of $80,000, which is well above the national average and makes this area one of the most productive places on Earth, giving it a 9 out of 10. Stability and confidence is very high. There's a reason this city has developed as an international centre of everything from finance to geopolitics, with even the UN choosing the city for its headquarters. It gets a 9 out of 10, only losing a point because it's subject to changes within the USA as well as around the globe. Growth has been strong, and the city is so connected to the USA's national economy that it tends to expand and contract more or less in line with it. Even still, it's achieved an average growth rate of just under 4% for the last decade, which is very impressive for such an established and advanced economy. It gets an 8 out of 10. Industry is obviously amazing. We've only explored the biggest and most influential stuff that happens in the city, but we could have easily spent an hour touching on everything that makes this city what it is. Just being the global centre of finance would have been enough, but add in technology, tourism, entertainment, diplomatic operations, construction, and good old-fashioned manufacturing, and it gets a clear 10 out of 10. Altogether, that gives New York an average score of 8.8 out of 10, matching another global centre of finance which really blurs the line between country and city. New York has been critical for building up the most powerful economy on the planet, but also the most powerful army. Nevertheless, the comparably tiny army of North Korea poses significant challenges to the US. If you want to learn more about this, check out this video on Context Matters, our new channel on geopolitics, which you should be able to click to on your screen now. Thanks for watching, mate. Bye.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.